Today is Martin Luther King's birthday, and I wanted to talk about diligence, because if Martin Luther King was anything, he was many, many things, of course, and one of his qualities was diligence. Staying true to the cause of civil rights through all sorts of obstacles, difficulties, even death. Diligence on retreat means that we follow the schedule wholeheartedly, that we give ourselves to the schedule. We don't pick and choose what we want to attend or when we're going to show up, but we show up for everything. And we do that to support each other. And we also do that to support our own practice. So when the bells are invited for us to stand up, we stand up. And when the bells are invited for us to go to a meal, we go to a meal. And it's really wonderful practice. It's very contrary to Americans, but it is wonderful nevertheless. because we don't have to think. We don't have to spend a lot of time wondering, well, what should I do next? We just follow the schedule, and we give ourselves, and we're supported by it. And we find that not only the schedule supports us, but the Sangha supports us too. So we are entering silence together. We're sitting here all together, breathing together, and calming our minds so that we can listen from silence. And in our days of silence, which are the rest of today and tomorrow and Wednesday, so not too much. If we find ourselves distracted and thinking about things, we can come back to our breath, and we can even look at what the silence is for us. Is it soft? Is it expectant? Is it happy? How would we describe our silence? So there's an old story. It's part of the Mumon Khan, where a monk asked Matsu, who's Basho. And some of you have encountered Basho in who's hearing. Actually, I'm sorry, that's Basui. Anyway, Matsu is very well-known and highly regarded Chinese Zen master. And so a monk came to him and asked, what is Buddha? And Matsu said, this very mind is the Buddha. And then Mumon, who collected the sayings, said, if you can grasp this point directly, you wear the Buddha's robe, you eat the Buddha's food, you speak the Buddha's word. That is, you yourself are Buddha. Don't you know? And then he goes on to say, and don't you know you should rinse your mouth out for 3 days when you utter the name of Buddha? If you are genuine, you'll run away holding your ears upon just hearing these words. This very mind is the Buddha. So part of the reason to have silence supporting us is not to dampen down ourselves, not to push away our thinking, or not to get quiet so we can work harder or try more to get focused, to find something, to find Buddha. We get quiet inside, we touch stillness inside, so that we can know what we're thinking and what we're feeling. Most of the time in our daily lives, our minds are just running along on their own, and we have no idea what's going on inside. We don't encounter ourselves at all. We're running away from ourselves the whole time. And so diligence, the true meaning of diligence is just this: not to work harder, not to try more, nor not to try to sit in quietude. We just need to be still enough to know our thoughts, our feelings, and our perceptions. And to be diligent simply means to be in touch with ourselves. So when thoughts arise, we are present to greet them, to know exactly what's going on in our mind. And when thoughts, feelings or perceptions arise, we also are present so we know what's going on inside of us. And mindfulness is like having a candle to enter into the cave of unknowing with a willingness to just hang out there, but with attention and looking around. What are our thoughts? What's coming up? And what do we do with it? Tai wrote a poem in the last year or so about that is recited, I think, in almost all the ceremonies, but definitely in transmission ceremonies like we had today. And I don't know the exact words, but it's a poem about the tyranny of superiority and the tyranny of inferiority and the tyranny of equality. It's about not getting caught in any of these things as notions. And I think in part he wrote this because of how rampant jealousy is in sanghas. And I remember when I was studying with him and was close to him on a regular basis, there was always a lot of sort of jockeying and jealousy and, you know, who's being chosen to do this and who's being chosen to do that, is he going to look at me or is he going to smile at me, and then there was this whole sense of, oh well, if I get a brown jacket and you know, so then I'm kind of part of the in group. And then other people would sort of, you know, feel out of a group. And, you know, the Sangha was rampant with that kind of thinking of my practice is better than someone else's, or my practice isn't as good as somebody else's, or we are all one, we're all absolutely equal. And so I think that poem was written recently in a response, because I expect that's still going on. And all of these are self-identifications. And the Diamond Sutra warns us against these attachments to a self. So mindfulness, in mindfulness, we know when we feel a feeling comes up like, oh, we're being passed over, or we're being let out, or we're not part of the in-group, or in any way whatsoever creating in or out thinking, better or inferior, right or wrong, getting caught in any of those dualistic thinking, even caught in the thinking of we're all one, everything's just perfect, everyone is the Buddha. That's what Matsu was saying, yeah, or Wuman was saying. If you say that, everyone is the Buddha, you need to rinse your mouth out for 3 days. And the difficulty is we believe in these concepts. We believe there's some truth in them. We are attached to them. And we suffer because of it. Another old folk tale that also comes from the Chinese. It was written. It was said in Tang Dynasty, China, there was this beautiful young woman named Seijo is the Sino-Japanese pronunciation of her name, Seijo. And Seijo's father, she had really a young man that she was played with, a young boy that she played with all the time and that she was really fond of. And one day her father just kiddingly said, "Oh, maybe someday you guys will grow up and get married." And because Seijo and the boy was Chua, were very close to each other, they kind of took that in the context of their culture as that they were betrothed. And then they grew up, you know, feeling great love for each other. And at one point, a very wealthy and prominent man in the village came to Seijo's father and asked for her hand in marriage. And he said, "Oh, yes." And Chua, when he heard that, felt totally betrayed and, you know, just really, really angry. And he decided he was just going to leave the village. He wasn't going to hang out there anymore. And so he got a boat and prepared all his things. And then one night left in the middle of the night in his boat. And as he was starting to paddle out of the village, Seijo came running along the banks to him, crying, "Take me with you, take me with you." And he stopped and she got in the boat and they left and went to the next province. And there they were married and lived very happily together and had two children. And at one point, Seijo began to feel really sad, really missed her family a great deal. And she told her husband that. And he said, well, that's no problem at all. Let's go back and ask forgiveness from your father. And re-establish our connection with your family." And so she did. They again prepared she agreed, and they again prepared the boat, and with the two children went back on the river to their village. And as was the custom of that time, Chua left Seijo in the boat and went back to the family home to speak with the father first. And he knocked on the door, and the father was overjoyed in seeing him. And he said, I've come to offer my deepest apologies. And the father said, "I don't know what you're talking about. I'm so happy you are here." And he said, "But I'm so sorry that I took your daughter away from you." And he said, "What do you mean, ever since the night you left? Seijo has been lying here in her bed. She fell into a stupor. And although she can understand us, she can't speak anymore." And they, you know, went back and forth like, you know, "I don't get this. What are you talking about?" And not quite being able to understand. And finally the father said, "Come in." And he invited him into the bedroom, and there Seijo, very pale and very still, was lying. And he said, "Well, you must come down to the riverbank with me." And so the father and Chua walked down to the riverbank, and there was Seijo with her two children. And the father was overjoyed and totally perplexed. And he said, "You must come with me." And so Seijo went back to the house with him. And when she stepped into the door, the Seijo that was lying on the bed rose up and they saw each other, and they ran to each other's arm and melted together as one. There are a couple of different levels of understanding the story. When we create concepts about what is going on, we create stories, then we get caught in them, and we believe in those stories. We are separating from ourselves, from our true selves. And if, on the other hand, we push those concepts away and say, oh, I'm a meditator, I'm complete, I don't get involved with my thinking, we also cut ourselves off. And the difference between those two things and letting go is that we need to acknowledge them. At some level, whatever is coming up in our hearts and our minds needs our attention, needs to be embraced, needs to be accepted. We need to make an agreement within ourselves to accept our thoughts, our feelings, and our perceptions just as they are. Actively engaged with our thoughts and our feelings and our perceptions without getting lost in them. This is mindfulness like the light going into the cave of unknowing, so that we greet what we find with openness to see what we can learn. And we have to be willing to hang out there. But still actively engaged. And this is the true meaning of engaged Buddhism. Because by engaging and becoming one with our thoughts and feelings in this way, they are healed and transformed, and we are set free. Our thoughts and our feelings are not the other, any more than the people around us are the other. Any more than the suffering of the world is the other. A friend told me this story recently. He said he felt that his heart had been opening up a lot. And he had always had a great deal of difficulty with his father. And he said one time he was with his father, and it was like he saw his father for the first time. And he had always felt that his father had preferred the youngest son in the family more than him. And when he saw his father in this way, he always felt really bad, and he resented his father, and he didn't like his brother, and he didn't feel like he really belonged anywhere, and he had a lot of feelings of loneliness. When he looked at his father with new eyes at one point, he saw that he had been a really difficult child. that he had caused a lot of suffering in the family. He'd been really rebellious. Part of his feeling not wanted was that he really pushed his father away. When his father wanted to play baseball, you know, he would say something nasty to him, like, you don't really want to play with me, or, you know, something that in some way he'd keep pushing his father away from him. And when he realized that and he saw, you know, how much of that negativity he was carrying inside of himself and how difficult he had made the situation in his family, it was like he completely forgave his father. And in that, he also forgave himself. He felt a great opening of freedom, that he didn't have to be the bad boy anymore. And a lot of his loneliness fell away. Taking the other, whoever it is we find, within ourselves, without, makes no difference. Taking the other as ourself, we find we become bigger, we become more free, we become lighter. In Tori Zenji Bodhisattva's vow, this is what he means when he says we completely relinquish ourselves and the most pure and profound faith arises. In that moment of transformation, our practice makes complete and utter sense. The Buddha speaks about this as signlessness, having no attributes whatsoever. We find that we are empty of a separate self. When you think about the game of billiards, one ball hits another ball, and the first ball stops, but there's motion that somehow is transmitted from one ball to the next. And that ball carries on and maybe hits three or four more balls. And some balls stop, some balls continue on. There is a subtle body that is acting. And yet, we can't say there is any body at all. Something wonderful and mysterious is always at work here, and we are part of that. We are both actor and we are acted upon. It's important to realize that there are three essential understandings. One is that each and every one of us is unique and special, perfect just as we are, a perfect manifestation of the whole. The other understanding is that we are completely interconnected with no separate body. We all, as in Thais Felicitas' term, inter are. And the third is that there's nobody here at all. No actor, no acting, nothing acted upon. Walt Whitman said, I am large, I contain multitudes. Shakyamuni Buddha, at the moment he looked up and saw the morning star rise in the east, he said, all beings at this moment have attained the way. Not mind, not Buddha, not self, not other. Yet all of us are in this together, in this mysterious unfolding of each moment. There is only one place for us to be. Listening breathing, smiling, and that is the smile of acceptance. Not getting lost in the confusion of our thoughts, but coming back to nourish ourselves as the waves roll in, as the wind blows through the fir trees, as the seagull calls to us. In each moment, we completely relinquish ourselves, our ideas, our perceptions, our feelings, and we come back to take nourishment from this wonderful moment that's unfolding. And in that place of stability, whatever arises is not other. And like Seijo, we embrace it. We become one with it. And in that oneness, we find the true light of our being. The true liberation of our practice. So we, I believe this is the true understanding of diligence. Not pushing anything away, not chasing after anything. And we have this opportunity together now to support each other in coming back to each breath. Stepping and touching the earth with each step. Letting go, letting go, letting go. Letting go so that nothing is other and everything is embraced.